It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here! Tonight, let us make them remember. We are not afraid!
Declare Your Independence with me, Ernest Hancock, another unafraid individual, David Abigo from EMS. You know, I want to make sure, Dave, we get right back to it. I see that they attack your business, your employees, your people that you have contracts with that sustain your employees. Now they're coming after your neighbors and you and your family.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, man, I would feel a little bit of emotion coming up about now.
Yeah, it's it is an emotional experience, but I'm one of those people that believe you need to do the right thing, both for your family, your employees, and your company. And I've always lived by perseverance, and I knew that as long as we continue to do the right things, we would win out in the end. And
well, that didn't always happen, man, I tell you that. Well, tell us how you did win. I mean, you went after them 44, 44 bunch, okay? You go after them with a lot of infractions. They held up on two of them, and they said, and the ruling was, thou shalt not what?
Well, the NLRB came back, and they found in our favor on those two I talked about, on the illegal picketing past 30 days and the secondary boycotting. So they went to the SEIU and said, okay, you know, you either need to settle and leave EMS alone, or we're going to take you to a hearing on this. And so the SEIU settled. They agreed not to to bother us anymore. And but during that same time period, the strike was still on, I told you about earlier. And so when they settled these, and the strikers wanted to come back to work, the 10 people that were out. And it was a very tough decision for me, but I decided that I wasn't going to reinstate them because of a couple things.
You had to replace somebody that was actually working.
Yeah, that's one. And because these people would come in and cross the picket lines and put up with all the harassment and that. And but the other one, which was truly the legal reason, the motivational reason, was that the people that were out on strike all participated in the illegal picketing, which the NLRB had found unlawful. So we had legal grounds to not bring them back, and so we didn't. As soon as we notified them of that, the SEIU filed 10 more unfair labor practices against us for not reinstating these people. And here's the really sad part, is the National Labor Relations Board, in their infinite wisdom, upheld the SEIU's complaints.
So you had to hire them?
Yeah, even though the NLRB had found these people were guilty of participating in these this picketing, it was illegal, and the SEIU picketing was illegal, they still upheld the fact that we should take them back. So we immediately appealed it. It went to a hearing, which was still within the confines of the National Labor Relations Board, and we won overwhelmingly. The administrative law judge found that we were we did everything right. Everything was dropped, and that the union's testimony was unbelievable and misconstrued, and so we won. Now, here's the downside of it. That was in June of last year. And immediately after we won that decision, both the SEIU and the National Labor Relations Board appealed the judge's decision. And that now is sitting for the National Labor Relations Board to make a decision on. And the scary part about that is that our president just recess appointed Craig Becker, who is a 17-year SEIU attorney, who is considered to be very radical. And he is on that board to make that decision.
So in your estimation, I mean, when you're talking, you know, blocks of power to get somebody in as Presidente of the United States, Estados Unidos, they have what on their side? I mean, what's the philosophy? How are they? I mean, it's more than just socialism. I mean, to think that this is not really socialism. I mean, socialism is from each accordion to each accordion. And this is not even that. This is just theft. I mean, it's extortion, it's blackmail, it's robbery. It's all kinds of ways you claim this to be violations of the Ten Commandments. I mean, you know, there's a lot of bad stuff going on here. What is the root philosophy of them? Is it really just to get a large number for voting blocks, or they love, you know, the worker? I mean, what's the motivation behind this?
Well, it's not altruistic at all. It isn't about the employee, and we see that in the contracts they do. We know people here locally that signed the neutrality agreement and eventually signed a contract with the union, that they tell me in conversations even today that they don't even see the SEIU people anymore. They're not around to enforce a contract. All they want is the union dues. And my feeling on it is that all this is about power and money for the elites in the unions. It's not about the rank and file. The rank and file people are not the problem. It's the elites that want to continue their way of life and the power and money that they enjoy. And and to some degree, they are also in that mindset of redistribution of wealth, that everybody should be the same.
Well, I'm trying to get to where I think this is going. I mean, I can't imagine that under the Obama administration they're going to do it less. Are the laws enough there that you are able to protect yourself? Do you feel that the laws that are on the books now are able to protect the next guy, or you were just more prepared?
Well, the laws as they're on the books now, if people are willing to do the things we have done, problem is it's very expensive. We spend a lot of money defending ourselves. It's very time-consuming. It is hard on the family. It's hard on the organization. I mean, I know of one competitor in Cincinnati where he and his wife almost got a divorce over this issue. And finally, they gave in and signed the agreement. But the laws are there. The problem is it's tough for employers to do it. I only know of a couple other people in my industry that have stood up to the SEIU. And, you know, that's out of thousands of janitorial contractors across the country.
Well, this is, now that we've gone through this, you got to see up close and personal how an organization like this will operate, because you're not really dealing with unionized employees. This is never really about the employees. They're just a pawn in this whole thing.
That's right.
You know, I would imagine the employer has a much greater self-interest in taking care of their employees than the unions do. The unions just want to get their, you know, dues every month.
That's right.
So now we're looking at an entire philosophy behind this that is, we can force them into this because we can. We know the tactics. It's activism. We're going to, you know, put enough pressure in that we can get a nice little block, because they looked at, you got 5,000 employees. They're going, multiply that times a little bit here and there. Oh, ooh, we're paying somebody's salary. So I, you know, God, what is that number? 5,000 times what is the dues? You know, $20, $30, $40 a month?
Yeah, we've heard a range from 25 to 40 in different cities. So depending on where it's at.
So that's like a lot.
Oh yeah, it's big numbers, and especially when you multiply it by all the janitorial companies in the country, and then you're going to food service workers and security guards, and you're talking huge numbers. And the SEIU is projected that if they can get the Employee Free Choice Act, and please let me say this, the neutrality agreement that I talked to you about, that is the genesis of the Employee Free Choice Act. That is where they got the idea, and they came up with the idea and said, okay, let's just get this made law, and it'll be a lot easier for us. We don't have to get the employers to sign the agreement. And the SEIU looked at it and said, okay, if we get it made law, we stand to gain another 5 million members or so in the next 5 years. I mean, those are big numbers. And for them to be altruistic about it, it just doesn't ring true.
Well, the math comes out to $1.5 million a year to just for doing what? Getting the contract signed to begin with for them just from your employees. So I can see the motivation for doing this. But I want, when we come back, we'll find out how this has affected David philosophically. You know, has he gotten involved? Why has he gotten involved? How has he gotten involved? We'll find out when we come back on Declare Your Independence in just a little bit.
There are those that just want to be left alone, and those that just won't leave them alone. Which one are you? The Ernest Hancock Show.
Welcome back to Declare Your Independence. With me, Ernest Hancock, and a test for David Bego. Is it Bego? Am I saying it right, David?
Bego is correct. You're doing very good.
Thank you. David, that intro music, where's that from?
What's that?
The intro music you just heard. Don't you recognize that? Everybody gets asked that.
Oh, I'm sorry, Ernest.
Johnny Quest!
I was thinking about something else and wasn't paying attention.
Johnny Quest! Oh, I was so happy to find that. So, you know, it's amazing. So many people asked for me to send them the MP3 of that. The one thing that I wanted to make sure that we brought up today is that we have, just in the last week, at the high last week, I think it was 11,200 and something, and it went down. The stock market went as low as 99.77 today. It went below 10. You know, that's a difference of, like, I don't know, 1,200, that's a lot,
mm-hmm.
a lot. Now, it bounced back up a little bit today, but it's still negative 347 for the day. I'm, from having your experiences with this and being in business, and in the business that you are, you have a wide range of opportunities for the businesses that you service. You get kind of get the idea of how they're doing. You have, instead of just your business, you're looking at a lot of other businesses that use your service, and they're wide and varied, I would imagine. And I'm just from that perspective, and having gone through this experience, that has to have affected your motivations to be involved, or at least understand, to learn who's doing what. You thought it's kind of, yeah, this government politic thing, it's over there, and I'm not really worried about it. At least I can go do this. And then all of a sudden you find, I got to get involved. I got to do something. I'm interested. What happened?
Well, Ernest, I was appalled, you know, when you listen to the stories that I tell, and I saw what happened to our employees and customers and our organization and personally, and I just felt that everybody in this country needs to know what's going on, because the SEIU and unions like them want to control things, and they'll do it at all cost. And something people have to understand is the unions financially are not in good shape. They need members and they need dues, and they're going to do anything they can to get people elected that will make pass laws that will allow them to unionize people forcibly, and that's what this is all about, forced unionism. Whether you want to be or not, you're going to be, and have the dues to continue doing what they want to do. And I just, I'm a real big believer in personal freedoms. As Americans, you know, we should be appalled when people are trying to take those away from us. And I see that's where that's going. And this is just a part of the whole scheme that we see today in politics and the administration. And so I'm speaking out. I've been doing speeches around Indiana. I've been in Washington, D.C. and spoke in front of the U.S. Chamber. I've spoke in front of contractors associations and Rotary clubs. And I'm committed to getting the word out. And because I think people need to know what's going on. I think we have to reverse the direction we're going in. If not, our kids and grandkids are going to suffer.
Oh, they're going to suffer. Yeah, I'm just hopefully on the way up or the way down. That's really the question. And it's from efforts like yours that, you know, give us a much better understanding of what's happening. We know where to target. And I'll tell you, you know, all my effort has always been focused on information. You know, we know the truth. Until you know the truth of things, all that other stuff isn't going to happen. You know, that's the first thing. And the one thing that, you know, just came to mind when you were talking about them needing money, I remember in the 90s, it's a long story, bottom line is this. The unions have their own buckets of money. You know, they're promising that they're keeping money aside for helping workers, strikes, different kind of benefit packages, blah, 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 blah. But it's just, it's buckets of money. And what do they do with it? They want to make more money. Now, they can do that through union dues, or they can do it in investments. And they have a lot of laws and limitations on what they can put in. But I would imagine there's probably some union money that was in the stock market, and then it took a dump. Oh, that wouldn't be good for them, would it?
No, it wouldn't. And but they're betting a lot of their money. I'm sure they're putting money in there. And you know, a lot of their pension funds are underfunded if you go look at them drastically, except for the salaried people. And but you look at it, the SEIU alone spent close to $80 million in the last election getting the people they wanted elected in the administration and in the House and Senate.
$80 million?
Yeah, and they borrowed somewhere close to $40 million.
You know, I was involved in one. Wow, we'll get to that in a second. I was involved in a campaign here. J.D. Hayworth is running against John McCain right now. When he ran for U.S. Congress in the 96, that, at that time, was the most expensive congressional race in U.S. history. It was over $40-something million spent on one congressional race. And a lot of that money, and we had a Libertarian candidate in there that was 10 times the difference between the two. It was 2 weeks even with computer voting before they knew who won. And they, man, they don't like that Libertarian thing in there going, you know, they're going on and on about a firewall around Social Security money, and we're going to do this and set another account and pinky swear and we promise. And if we don't fix it by the time it hits 2010, you know, now we're going to be screwed, blah, 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 blah. And I remember the Libertarian candidate was up and he said, Can I have a firewall around my wallet? That's all I want. You know, problem solved. But the money, where it came from, was J.D. Hayworth, which was a sportscaster on television news here at the time, and right wing Republican deal. The Democrat candidate was Steve Owens, which was the state chair of the Democratic Party. So you can imagine how much of that money being spent was union money. And it was millions and millions and millions that they can spend on this one race. And I saw them pull out all of the, they lost anyway, but, you know, they so many election fraud problems here that, you know, you have no idea what really happened. But they certainly were not averse to spending money. So you're saying $80 million, that's like a chunk also, even in a national campaign. And when you're looking at that much money, you're saying they borrowed $40 million also for what?
That's what we understand, well, to finance their campaigning, and because they know that they need to get the people elected they want. And they have, and I've been a little remiss in saying this, but I need to tie the parallels together a little bit. Our current president from Chicago was actually a part of the SEIU's back in the early part of this decade, and even attended some of their rallies and spoke and said, made comments like, I'm going to support the SEIU. I used to be an organizer with you guys, and, you know, we're going to paint this country purple. And,
Saw the YouTubes. I mean, he was going on about he's got his purple jacket. I mean, why purple? Was that union color or something?
The SEIU is purple, yes. Mm. That's their color, purple predominantly and yellow. And if you look at the tactics that the unions use, it's the same tactics that the administration's using. It's they call it death by a thousand cuts. It's a corporate campaign against businesses, but they throw out just overwhelming provisions and different bills and all that, to the point where you can't keep track of everything that's going on, knowing things are going to get through. And that's what's happening with this administration. I mean, every day it's something different. And
well, you know, these unions, they didn't flourish just under Democrats. I mean, this kind of stuff happens under Republican administrations, too. In fact, you know, heck, the one that you're going up against is primarily grew under the Republican administration. Did they help you?
No, no. And you're right, it's on both sides of the aisle, and but it's more predominant on the Democratic side. No, there wasn't anybody out there that wanted to help us. You have to understand that that's kind of a taboo issue with most people.
Well, when we come back, I want to talk to David about the... Well, it's not just philosophical. I mean, you know, there are those that want to change the people so that we know when this comes and what the right choice is. And then there are those that want to be in political power. Well, those in the Republican Party political power, were they of any help? You know, he's a wealthy businessman. Did he have any friends? Well,
it's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock.
Less conversation, a little more action. All this aggravation ain't satisfaction in me.
Yeah, I need some satisfaction. Well, you know, I'm looking for people that can do that. You know, I highlight people that have challenged the omnipotent cult, you know, this omnipotent state thing, you know, this adoration, this worship of this all-powerful, all-knowing state. Who challenges them? Where do they get? Where do they feel some pain? Where do they, you know, feel? Whoa, wait a minute. We'll go over here. You know, or we'll stop, or we'll do that. We have some resistance somewhere. Where does that happen? Where does that happen? Who does that? Well, I don't know. Let's find out. You know what, David? I would imagine that you're a prominent individual in the business community. You probably, you know, you have a part ownership or own a country club or something, don't you?
Yeah, we own a Maple Creek Country Club on the east side of Indianapolis. It's Pete Dye's first 18-hole golf course.
You know what I think? I think there's some important Republicans that go there. That's what I think.
Well, there's a few, yes.
And they came out and said, you know what, David, man, you know, Pace, we're on your side. You want to help?
Well, they're always on our side.
Yeah, but... a golf clap.
I appreciate really? That. They've always been on our side and understand what we've gone through and that, and we appreciate that. Politically, though, there's not much anybody could do to help us as we went through this thing. And but what we're trying to do now is get people on both sides of the aisle to understand what's going on, that, you know, people's rights, people's freedoms are at risk here, and that we can't allow some of these laws to be passed, or we can't allow laws to be rewritten, like this Craig Becker I was telling you about earlier, who was appointed to the National Labor Relations Board wants to do. He has come out and said he believes he can basically rewrite National Labor Relations Law to put most of the Employee Free Choice Act into effect. Well, if that happens, people's rights are going to go away.
Well, tell us about this act. I mean, you know, there's a lot of value in them doing this very thing. In fact, the network, they're putting, you know, question in my math. I calculated it out at $25 a month. It'd be low. So that's, you know, times 5,000 employees over a period of year. It's $1.5 million. But, I mean, you know, double that. That's $3 million. So, I'm, you know, there's a lot of money. And so with the stroke of a pen, all of a sudden, ka-ching, and then they have an entire, you know, $80 million, you know, what they're spending on campaigns. So I'm going, this is enormous incentive for them to use government to impose laws that would make them more money to support the government that would impose more laws for them to make money. I mean, this is craziness. So I'm going, okay. So as you're doing this, I really need to know who is on your side. I mean, golf clapping don't do nothing. I want to know, where are the in Indiana, are they all Democrat congressmen? I mean, what's going on?
Well, you know, the congressmen, here's the problem we have in the House. In the House, of course, is a Democratic majority. And the House will vote for this bill in a heartbeat. all the Republicans will not. In the Senate, it's the same way, although there are some Democrats in the Senate that have come out against it, like Blanche Lincoln in Arkansas and a few others. So they know they can't get the bill through right now. There's no way they can get it through.
Well, tell me what the Employees Free Choice Act does.
Well,
which they just want to enact administratively anyway.
Well, it would eliminate the secret ballot election just like the neutrality agreement did. So it would go to card check. And if it goes to card check, like as the stories I told, they'll go to people's houses, they'll wait for them coming into work, they'll harass them and intimidate them until they sign cards. They will get millions of people across the country to sign cards and be unionized. It's forced unionism, as I said. The second part is mandatory arbitration. And what that means is if the company and the union can't come to an agreement within 12 months, it automatically goes to a government arbitrator who knows nothing about the particular industry, and he will decide what the agreement is, and the union gets an automatic two-year agreement. Okay? And here's the sad part.
Wait. Just by bringing it to them, they automatically get a two-year agreement while they adjudicate it or something? What are you saying?
No. You negotiate with them, if you don't get it done within the 12-month period, then the arbitrator from the government steps in. He decides what the terms of the agreement are going to be, and he dictates that, and you have to sign off on it. And it's a two-year agreement. So the unions basically have 2 years of free dues.
I want to make sure everybody understands how nefarious this is. We have the proper role of government, defense of individual rights, you know, to defend property rights, which is you have a property right in a contract. You know, I own my labor. This is my labor. I can do what I want with my labor. I can, you know, organize with a bunch of my buddies, and then we say collectively we're going to do whatever with our labor. And you go, okay, well, we'll negotiate a deal, or we won't. And you know, say, have a nice day. I'm hired somebody else. It's been real. Well, the thing is that when you start getting government involved in this stuff, no longer are they a disinterested third party defending property rights in a contract to adjudicate whatever, you know, who's right and wrong, and the agreement has been made and we're going to enforce a contract. They are the contract. They're involved in the contract. They benefit from the contract. This is so broken, man.
Yeah, and here's the sad part. When the arbitrator decides what that contract is, in a normal situation, the company and the union finally agree on all the terms of the contract. It has to go back to the employees to vote on the contract. Okay? They have to approve it. In this case, once the government arbitrator says this is it, the employees get no vote on it. It's a mandatory two-year contract.
Well, I can imagine, you know, who wrote the bill, but who's primary sponsor? Who's supporting this thing?
Well, the big unions, SEIU and AFL-CIO, are the two biggest ones that are pushing behind it, but most unions are...
No, I mean congressmen. I mean, you know, there's got to be somebody putting their chest out saying, I love this bill.
Well, it was introduced in 2007, and there were several Democrats, including Senator Bayh here from Indiana, that sponsored the bill originally. And there's a lot of them that are still behind it, and there's new people that have stepped forward.
So where's the solution? You know, is it? I tell you what, you're finding out really fast. You're not going to find the solution inside the halls of Congress.
Well, the thing is we have to, this fall, we have to change the makeup of the House and Senate. We got to get people in that will not allow these laws to go through. And, you know, I urge people every chance I get, when you go vote in the fall, you need to look at every candidate, whether it's an independent, a Democrat, a Republican, a Libertarian. You got to find people that are going to vote for personal freedoms, personal choice, and limited government. And that's the only way we're going to get these things stopped.
You know, this is a good time to have this discussion. And it's, of course, my audience is familiar with it a lot, and readers of Freedom's Phoenix and so on. But this has been my chant you know, for decades. You are not going to get the freedom-oriented people inside the halls of Congress until you have a freedom-oriented, educated, understand what the heck's going on populace. It's not even going to be a chance. So I'm when you have three candidates up there, that one Democrat, we need, you know, socialism in our lifetime kind of thing, and a Republican up there, fascism in our lifetime kind of thing, a libertarian freedom in our lifetime. You know, I'm wondering, are you encouraging people to vote libertarian that would understand this when you have a more likelihood of electing a Republican that's going to be in there over the Democrat? I mean, what are you advocating?
Well, as I said, I advocate looking at the choices there and voting for the people that we think are going to protect our freedoms the most. And if it's libertarian, it's libertarian. And,
yeah, but they don't get elected. They're not going to be protecting it. I mean, are you still advocating for them, you know, registering their preference with a vote for a libertarian? I mean, you know, you're dealing with real politic here. You know, I approach it differently. I see an educated and understanding and truth told and communicating one-on-one entire generation libertarian-minded people, just, you know, this will get fixed. But in the short term, when you're looking at election and you got choices up there, you know, and the libertarian's pulling his 1.3% and they're neck and neck, Democrat and Republican, we got to. And that's how they get you every single election. No. Don't, it's a horse race. Don't be advocating over here because the bad guy might get in. This guy's not as bad. Well, when we come back, you know, think about that, David, because when we come back, you know, I want to talk about that because that is the choice every single election cycle has been working out for us. Huh? I don't know. We're going to talk about it. I know we'll get Ernie up. We'll be right back.
And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
It just ain't the same. Always a change. New days are strange. Is the world insane? If love and peace is so strong, why are the pieces of love that don't belong? Nations dropping bombs. Chemical gases filling lungs of little ones with ongoing suffering. As the youth are young, so ask yourself, is the loving really gone? So I could ask myself, really, what is going wrong in this world that we living in? People keep on giving in, making wrong decisions, only visions of them dividends. Not respecting each other, denying thy brother. A war's going on, but the reason's undercover. The truth is kept secret, it's swept under the rug. If you never know truth, then you never know love. What's the love, y'all? Come on.
I don't know.
What's the truth, y'all? Come on.
I don't know.
What's the love, y'all?
We're forgetting, people dying, children hurting,
Father, Father, from above, man, give us some answers. This is the next generation. These guys are expressing themselves. They're like, without truth, you can't have love. This is, they're starving for information. And are they get it from the cable news? Heck no. We have 300 million people in this country. And we're worried about, you know, the people that are talking to 3 million of them. I mean, MSNBC, CNN, Fox News, all of them together combined are 3-4 million on a big maximum, oh my goodness, Glenn Beck screaming. You know, Sean Hannity, they're going at it, man. Woo! There's a scandal. 3-4 million. That's it. That's all they get. 300 million people, entire generation. How many were involved and saw what's going on over the last couple of years? So I have to ask David. I'm going, David, you know, are we going to keep doing what we've been doing? You know, we're going to get the right. We're going to run for office. We're going to get the right guys in there. We're going to get the elephants and the donkeys. We're going to play nice. You know, I have to. You know, from all of your experiences, wouldn't it have been probably a little bit better if the entire population knew what the heck was going on?
Oh, absolutely.
Well, how do we do that? Are we going to go vote Republican? I mean, what?
That's a good question, Ernie. I mean, we need people like you that keep putting the word out, and it's frustrating. And like I say, that's why I wrote the book, because I'm trying to get the word out to people, what the things that are going on.
Okay, this is the point that I'm building up to. A lot of people, when they write a book like you've done, you've gone through this, you feel compelled, you have the ability, you take the time out of your life to go through this process, chronicle it, put it down, be of benefit to someone else that's doing it. You go through that and you go, wow, where is everybody? You know, who's the next guy? Where's the next person? Where? And from someone like, from my standpoint, has been doing this since 88, you're the guy I've been waiting on. You know, there's a whole bunch of Davids. And whenever they do, you know, someone that did a new movie, a new documentary, a new revelation of a lawsuit they won or they just filed or they went, they go through this and they're like, where is everybody? I go, you are everybody. I've been waiting on you. You know, there's people been doing this waiting on you, you, and you have inspired the next person and the next person. There will be more. And it's not about who has the most money or power or who even gets to go visit the White House 66 times. You know, that's not what it's about. It's about understanding who the bad guys are. What's the proper role of government? Are they defending individual rights or are they taking them away? What did the Declaration of Independence say? I mean, it's real clear. It didn't say what kind of government. It just said, yeah, you want to know who the bad government is? It's the one that's not defending your individual rights. And, oh, my goodness, they're the ones taking them away. So I'm going, this is a perfect example of what has happened. And I'm going, okay, so is it a one election cycle thing? Is it a, it's a what? I mean, it's an education thing. I mean, a lot of the most successful people being able to do this, how they did it was through the education system. They did it over decades, over generations. That's one of the reasons I feel so optimistic is they spent tens of trillions with a T dollars over generations to mandatory youth indoctrinate kids in the public school system into thinking whatever it is that they want them to. So I'm going, you know, so here comes the internet. Here we have, in just the last couple of years, an entire generation of youth going, I don't think so. So now we're looking at this election cycle coming up, and there's going to be games played on both sides, left, right, ouch, quit it. You know, McCain, you know, loves immigrants. He doesn't love immigrants. He wants to close the border. He doesn't want to close the border. He wants to have national ID, which, oh, we never wanted national ID, but now we got national ID. We do that, then we can have amnesty, and people, we have two classes of citizens. Be like, you know, Palestinians and Israel. I mean, you know, it's just, you know, get your Star David on your arm. I mean, this stuff is just craziness. And we let it go every single election cycle because we're always comparing to how bad it might be if those guys get in, as opposed to how bad it's going to be because we don't understand what's really going on. So I'm going, all right, David, do me a solid, man. You just keep doing what you're doing. You keep sharing the information with everybody out there and what fundamentally is the problem. The problem is not these guys coming to you to take your money. The problem is us. We weren't paying attention while they were getting all organized to do it. And then we don't understand what really is going on in Congress, what the proper role of government should be. And I guarantee you're not having just problems from a federal standpoint. How about state level? You know, where was the state enforcement? Where were your rights being protected at a state level? Was there anybody?
No, it's even at the local levels because, and here's the problem, you know, as I listen to you talk about this, when I talk and speak to people and I ask them how many people, like the Employee Free Choice Act, how many people know? When I'm in an audience, like I spoke at the Libertarian State Convention here in Indianapolis a couple of weeks ago, less than half the people raised their hand. Most people don't want to be involved. They just want to go run their lives, and they don't want to be bothered. And they think it's not going to affect them. But we have to get people involved. Because if they don't, we're going to be in trouble. And the other side gets people involved. I'll give you an example here in Indianapolis. The SEIU got to one of the board members on the city county here in Indianapolis and got this lady to introduce an ordinance where they would recognize the SEIU and their cause, which was called Janitors for Justice here, and would give them special permission and permits to do their picketing and rallying outside of buildings that us and some other contractors cleaned. And we as people just let it happen. Nobody even knew it happened. It went to the commission. The commission voted on it, approved it, and went through. And, you know, we had a big rally outside of one of our buildings. They must have had 400 people there, some of the clergy people that they... With a government permit. And the person, the manager that ran the building we cleaned, he called me. He says, Dave, I cannot believe this. He says, you know, I cannot get a permit from the city to close down the street if I want to have an appreciation day for all the tenants in my building. But the SEIU got one, so they can picket and rally against you. But you both know, of us just aren't. We're out doing what we do as people, doing our jobs, trying to take care of our families. And
well, you did. You did right up until you got them in your face. I mean, everybody does until their ox gets gored. You know, my thing is that you'll see, you'll go to libertarians and you'll say, how many of you know about this, 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 and this? And, you know, probably a higher percentage you know about than the population. But a lot of them are like, do I have to know? I don't want to know. I don't care. You know, I just know what the government, it's kind of a negative thing. It's like they're only supposed to be doing certain things. Is it a piece of paper that has anything to do with labor, that has anything to do with this? I think they shouldn't be doing any. I don't have to read it. I know it's wrong at the beginning. You know, it's like, well, you know, did you know what they're doing with the Department of Education at the federal? Well, I don't care. They shouldn't be there to begin with. So you can understand from a libertarian standpoint, a lot of times they never even get to that point. I want to, you know, fight this one thing. I want to fight the entire concept. The whole mindset of America is what is the proper role of government. They've gotten so far out. But I tell you what's, you know, it's going to be putting it right in our face. It's going to be the disintegration of Europe. And with the U.S. very close behind. On this show, I tell you a lot, David, a lot of times I just, you know, promote the fact that we live in Central Phoenix, have a garden and six chickens. I got more eggs than I know what to do with. I'm just like, you know, got chickens? Because that's what it's going to come down to. Can you feed yourself? How much food do you have under your bed? You know, how's that stock market thing doing today? I mean, you know, I'm just, there's so much more important information than every single little stupid thing that the government does. I can't keep up with it. I do this 4 hours a day, David. There's no way I could possibly keep up with all this stuff. And so what I go to the short list. What's the proper role of government? Defense of individual rights. So that's what they're doing. No, next. You know, so it's really not that hard. I focus on that. But we need people like you doing exactly what you did, chronicling this, informing us when it comes to our turn and there's the next guy that's going on the internet looking for this kind of information, he finds your book. And I'll bet you made the attempt and you didn't find anybody's book, did you?
Nope, I didn't. There just wasn't people out there. They're afraid to fight it. Most people don't want to get involved. They don't want to have to put up, and they're afraid to do it. And
you know, the people aren't as bad. I give you an example. I was 2.5 years on Air America affiliate here in Phoenix, okay? 2.5 years, man, we're doing, I was producing a show, I had my own show, we're just, and talking to the left, we're their token libertarians, man. We're just, you know, what's up? We have these conversations on this very issue. They would understand the issue. They would understand. But, you know, what are you advocating? You know, you're going to someone on the left, you know, what are you telling them? What is it that you want them to understand from the left? How are they being damaged, David? You know, what was the one message you would bring to them?
That we as a country are losing our individual freedoms, and if we don't stop it now, we're going to lose it forever. And we need to get it back.
You know, they may just be all right with that as long as they get their goodies.
No, they do. When you talk to some of them, they understand. We had people working for us that stood up and said, these people out on the street promising all this stuff, they're crazy. That can't happen. We know that. So there are people, they do know.
There are people that do know. David Bigo helped them get informed.